in there having the time of my life, and then his tunes come on. I was like, just seeing everyone, like, you know, giving it some of that. Like, I was like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. And that was from that moment, like, that's when I wanted to be a DJ. I said to my mate, I want to be a DJ. He's like, what? I said, I want to be a DJ. I want to do exactly what he's doing. I want to make people feel how I'm feeling now by being a DJ. Yeah, every single set, I get nervous. Sometimes I'm heaving, and more often than not, I go to the toilet always 5 minutes before my set, and I'm there. I'm like, come on, Joe, you've got this.
So if you're ever heaving into the mic, it's not part of a new, it's not a new vocal, it's just carrying your nerves.
Yeah.
So do that with your gun, Joe.
I'm leaning up the wall with one hand, and then whatever with the other hand, I'm like, you've got this. The room was so dark, and the only thing that was the light in that room was the end of the spliff being like, when it had been sucked, you just seen, oh, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, oh, 6 people in the room.
Like a lighthouse.
Yeah, it was that dark in the room. And I was like, you know,
bugs.
Just become a thing then, like, and because a lot of my records have got that click, click, power, power in it, I just do it to all my records now that I've got that click, click, power, power in it. And I did
just before it drops as well. It's click, click, pow, pow, and then it drops, and the crowd just like, oh,
yeah. So I'd go like click, click, pow, pow, and then go out to the crowd, like, you know what I mean?
Before we get into this, we're doing over 1 million engagements a month, but most of you aren't subscribed. If you enjoy the content, hit subscribe and follow us on socials. It'll make such a massive difference. Cheers.
So, yeah, morning. Morning. Joe, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Good. It's an absolute pleasure, Cut. No, probably worth mentioning. So on the way in, he'd mentioned to one of the lads at work, so
yeah.
He said, who you got on today? And he said, Joe Hunt. And Joe Hunt said, I only know one Joe Hunt. He said, yeah, that Joe Hunt. Yeah. Joe Hunt. Thought, no way, man. How? I was just like, I don't know. Persistence, been a little bit annoying. And just constantly be like, all right, mate. It's gonna come on. And you're and the moon's aligning with your work.
Yeah, well, I did actually have another call for podcaster yesterday saying, can I do a podcast with them? I was like, I'm all podcasted out now. This is like literally I've done obviously the ones that I did in Australia, then obviously you, then that one with that young lad, and then you guys, like, you know, it's got, we've got to get a bit more content to talk about, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So let's maybe do it the back end of the year, and we've got a whole year to talk about it. You know what I mean? Otherwise, all three podcasts are going to be like, oh, you spoke about it on the last one, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean?
It's saturated.
Yeah. So no, we'll try.
Love it, man. I love that. Mm. Yeah, we're part of the exclusive.
Yeah, so just to clarify, Made in Brum podcast, Joe. Why are you Made in Brum before people tell us that you weren't Made in
Brum? You got some powders?
Are we recording, by the way?
Yeah, recording.
All right.
Yeah, for real.
So ask the question again, sorry.
So Made in Brum?
Yeah.
Or we were talking off camera about why you are Made in Brum.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Crawley, down by Brighton. That was where I first started going out when I was 15. I had no, like, kind of desire to be a DJ. I enjoyed going out, you know, kissing girls and getting into clubs with my fake ID and drinking Archer lemonade. So, you know,
loving.
Yeah. So really, I had no desire of music or anything like that. I had no career direction. It was kind of like, you know, I was just living my teenage life and, you know, waiting to be legal to actually get into a club. But I kind of moved to Birmingham, got engaged at a very young age of 18 on my 18th birthday.
Why?
I know. Yeah. But it was kind of like, it wasn't one of them seriously, I don't know why I did it, but anyway, I ended up moving to Birmingham because the girl was from Birmingham. I kind of upped and left at the age of 18. My mum was like, you know, you'll be back, son, you know, I'll give you 6 months and you'll be back. And I was like, so I just thought to myself, you know what, I'm just gonna give it a good go up there, like, you know what I mean, see what happened, prove my mum wrong, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I'll show kind of that. Kind of got up here, the relationship fell to shit as I thought it would and knew it would. I haven't really touched on this before because I don't know, no one's really asked me, and it's kind of coming out here now. Maybe it's the coffee that I've had, but
yes.
I became homeless, so I kind of hit rock bottom because I kind of moved up here, and obviously it was her house and whatnot. So when I moved out, I was actually deemed homeless, and I was sleeping on a friend's sofa who worked opposite at the petrol station that I had a part-time job at. And I was on his sofa for about 4 weeks, ended up living in King's Heath in a, it was called Dinglemead, which was, now I've been flattened because it was that rough. Lived in a ground floor flat. And anyway, ended up getting half decent job at a place called Dave and Buster's. In Solihull. As a games technician. So I was working in the arcade, fixing all the games. From that then I kind of got myself a place in Birmingham City. No, in Kings, not Kingsley. Yeah, not from Kingsley. Not, what's it called?
Kings Norton.
No, Solihull Lodge.
Okay.
Solihull Lodge.
Yeah.
Warstock, actually. I've been too posh about this.
Like that.
So I lived opposite the Warstock pub. And my friend at the time that I met at Dave and Buster's, he was kind of like, oh, you know, come to Birmingham and, you know, because he knew I was into music, but not like on a level of like, you know, like clubbing, just I liked music. He's like, come to this this party with me, like this after party thing. So we've gone there and I stood there and a guy called Rick James was playing and he dropped a tune called Birmingham Crew. You've got to know that tune, which is made by B15 Project, which ironically... we actually rub shoulders now, which is really weird because obviously it was like the tune that the kind of, or one of the tunes that kind of flipped me to want to be a DJ. So cut long story short, in there, having the time of my life, and then his tunes come on, I was like, just seeing everyone like, you know, giving it some of that. Like, I was like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. And that was from that moment, like, that's when I wanted to be a DJ. I said to my mate, I want to be a DJ. He's like, what? I said, I want to be a DJ. I want to do exactly what he's doing. I want to make people feel how I'm feeling now by being a DJ.
Have you told him this? Told the B15 Project?
Yeah, he knows. He actually does know about it, to be fair. At the time, I was riding a moped to and from Warstock to Dave and Buster's, and I didn't really have a lot of money at the time, but this guy I know was selling a set of belt drive decks. And I ended up swapping my transport, my means of transport, for these set of belt drive decks that are like absolutely crap, by the way. So I swapped, didn't have any way of getting to work or anything like that, but I didn't think about that at the time. It was just like, sod it, let's just get some decks. And then, ironically, the night after I swapped these decks, this guy that I swapped the decks for tried to break into my house to rub his decks back.
Get lost.
Yeah. And I was living with my friend at the time, the guy that took me to West End Bar, and he walked into our house, and this guy's head, the PVC doors, the top frame would have been glass and the bottom frame would have been plastic, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And he booted the bottom panel out and my mates walked into the house and into the kitchen. He's like halfway through, you're almost in the house to come rub the decks.
Right,
yeah, he's like,
like a human
and
cat
he licked it like, but he come to rub my decks back.
Oh my God.
You know, like, Jesus Christ, mate, give a man a break. You know what I mean? I've got no transport and then no decks.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Turned up on your moped. Parts in your back garden.
Yeah.
Human cat flap, like, all right.
Yeah. So, obviously continued DJing and ended up moving into Birmingham and bought myself some Technics 1210s. The place is actually gone now. Do you know where Snobs, the new Snobs, on the corner by the lights, the main lights, and you had Richer Sound? If you carry on up, as if you're going to the Bullring car park, on the right-hand side, it used to be called Hi-Fi. That's where I bought my first set of 1210s from. And just from then, it was just full ammo. I just started going to all the clubs there and like Dust Door Door. Genesis ended up getting like residences at Genesis. And
how did you first get into the clubs then?
Blagged it, to be honest. Yeah. And just persistence of, just kind of you know, just being there all the time. And I don't know, it kind of, not accidentally friends place, but I just think that the passion was that fierce. Like, it just couldn't be ignored, you know what I mean?
Well, they're like, come on then, give us there all the time. So just ID.
Yeah, yeah.
Similar to Bruce's story, isn't it? He used to turn up with his records and just be like, if you need me, I'm here. If you need me, I'm here. And he's like, all right. And someone's let us down.
Mm.
Right place, right time.
Yeah.
Lots of assistance.
I remember walking around Birmingham Pride. Remember, it used to be all down the streets.
Yeah.
I used to be free entry. I remember walking around there, and at the time, I had loads of vinyls, but my favourite vinyls was probably that many in a, it wasn't even a proper record bag. It was like, my mate give it me. It was like a cat, you know, cat, the diggers.
Yeah.
It was like a cat bag. So you had the big cat sign on it, like, and you put records in and you put the flap over and it didn't quite go over. So the cat sign was still sitting on the top, like obviously the shape of the vinyl. You understand what I'm trying to say? It wasn't meant for vinyl.
After you made it, then people are walking around with that, like it's a style. I've got my German cat.
So I was walking around Birmingham Pride and there was like a pop-up stand and they had a set of decks and it was like, oh, do you want to jump on, like? And you know what? I remember it to this day, and people walking past, and I was just like trying to just capture people's attention, like, you know what I mean? Like DJing, and oh, it's just mad. But yeah, so like the moral of the story is I was made in Brum as a DJ. This is, you know, the whole story is the ending point is the roots are from Birmingham. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it all started.
Who that is, though, and if you're carrying the records around, there's a pop up stand. It's like, before, and it's all the universe.
I mean, nothing really come of it, but it was just kind of like, I don't know, it's just one of them moments I always remember, like, because it's so hard to get into clubs and stuff, because, I mean, you see the thing now, like, they have their regular DJs, and, you know, it's, you ain't going to get in unless one of them are sick or don't turn up or whatever, like, you know, so, you know, that moment when I got asked, walked past, and went, oh, do you want to jump on, mate, like, sound, you know, it was like I felt like it was one of them tiny little breakthroughs into the music industry, like, because I wasn't really playing anywhere,
and it all came in the face of adversity, that if you wasn't made homeless and the butterfly effects,
and
I decided to go back to Brighton and just go and do a normal job. But
even my mum was saying, I remember being obviously homeless at this point. I was living in this flat in Kingsheath, and you know, I literally didn't have anything to eat. I was doing my washing in the bath. I was cooking my food on a Breville maker. See, do you know what? This is going to be exclusive. No, I've never told this story on any podcast ever. So I was kind of like, you know, rock bottom, you know, in my life, zeroed. I suppose it's for I appreciate more so what I have now, and kind of, you know, don't really walk around with, you know, that arrogance. And when things do happen that are amazing, it's kind of like, it's amazing, yeah, but I want the next thing, like, you know what I mean? I don't kind of get too excited about that moment because I want the next one, you know what I mean? But I don't know if it's something that's having nothing teaches you when you've got something that, you know, don't get too excited about it because, you know, you could end up with nothing again. I don't know, maybe. 100%.
It's been a thread through these podcasts, hasn't it? That you get people who have done the yards and done the hard yards, and then when you've made it, then it's deserved, and
it's never
take the highs too high, the lows too low.
It's never been a silver spoon career for me. Never at any point, you know, like it's all been self-made. I mean, no one can really turn around and say it was because of me. You know, I've always had them kind of morals where you don't owe someone a favour for being where you are.
I think there's a lot of that in the industry. Because I imagine it's quite frustrating when you see people just pop up on social medias and nepotism kind of friends of friends or celebrities, famous family members or something on a set of decks.
Yeah, again, they've already got a leg up, haven't they? Like, you know, I've been at this 28 years coming up, you know, and I don't hold any like envy or anything like that, but you know, you see people that have just been around for six, to 12 months or 2 years, and they're playing at then these dream venues that you've worked so hard to strive towards. And obviously, they're still my goals. And like I say, I don't envy. It just gives me that extra like push to want to, you know, get to that point in my career.
Yeah.
So it's always a fair play. Never like, oh, look at that wanker. You know what I mean? It's always like, you know.
Yeah.
Just gives me that extra push on it.
So yeah, so take it back to the start then, pubs and clubs. Let's name drop a few. Let's name drop a few people who were good and just kind of back in the day. I know you've probably got too many to mention, but and then I want to move on to Silk City, because obviously Silk City is the what we was growing up and,
yeah.
I feel like you're a massive hand in that. So touch upon all of that. Yeah.
So like coming through, it was kind of like Tall Paul for me, Judge Jules, Lisa Lashes, kind of like them ones that are kind of up there. They were kind of like my idols as such, like, but I don't think I ever wanted to be them or be, you know, play that music. I just like liked what they did. You know what I mean?
The show.
Yeah. I mean, Judge Jules, he always used to put on a show. Lisa Lashes. I just had a lot of tape packs of Lisa Lashes. And I've actually, last year, met her for the first time. And I'm like, do you know what? You're such an amazing woman. You know, I said, you know, because obviously back then it was a man's world, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it was a very big man's world. And obviously now there's a lot more female DJs. So I was like, you know what? Like, I've got a lot of respect for you for being coming through in a man's world then. And doing as well as you did, because there was very, very few. I mean, you had Rachel Auburn, I think it was, as well, at the time. You know, there was a handful of... You had DJ Rap as well, that did all the drum and bass and jungle and stuff and hardcore. But, yeah, as far as, yeah, the respect levels for Lisa Lashes is like... And for it to still be current now as well, I said, you know what, I've just got, you know... A lot of respect for you. And you was one of my idols, by the way. And she's like, oh, no way. But yeah, it was great to meet her. And she's a really lovely woman.
He's just like, just talking.
Really lovely woman. Because I've had a lot of one-to-ones, but I won't mention any names, but I've met...
Michael one.
No, I can't.
Mention the tossers.
I can't. So I've met a couple of people that were my idols, and it was a very disappointing meet, let's just say that. I felt quite offended by the response, and all I was doing was telling them that the reason why I'm here today is doing what I'm doing is because of you. Like, you was the inspirations, and I walked away very disappointed. And put it this way, I do not give a shit about them anymore. I do not even listen to them, support them, or anything no more. And they've ruined it.
That's the old adage, isn't it?
Yeah.
Never met your heroes.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
that doesn't appeal, like you
said. No, Lisa Lashes, amazing, absolutely amazing. Yeah, amazing. So, yeah. So, I was talking about the clubs and stuff.
Yeah, it goes. Yeah,
clubs, yeah. So, I really travelled too much out of Birmingham when, you know, back in the day it was, you know,
it was booming though, wasn't it?
Well, I didn't have a moped anymore for a start.
Try and put wheels on the decks.
So yeah, it was just mainly like Birmingham. It was like your West End Bar, like your Genesis club, which I was a resident at. I then got introduced to Sunday Central, which is where I first saw Judge Jules at Pulse nightclub. And that's when I was like, oh my god. Yeah, it's just like really just like the Birmingham stuff, really. It was just none of it was really commercialized like it is now with these big super clubs and Warehouse Project Manchester. It was all underground venues, you know what I mean? After parties and naughty hour openings and illegal parties and stuff like that. So there's nothing really that iconic that anyone would relate to, apart from if you're from Birmingham.
Core.
Yeah, unless you're from Birmingham.
Well, Stevie Bakers and that kind of parade and stuff are there.
Yeah.
That was...
Mud G2.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... Yeah. We're going on a bit later now, aren't we? We're going into, you know...
Even then, it was still millennium. Kind of... that's the millennium, wasn't it?
Yeah, kind of moving into them times. Like, G2, it was one of them places that I'm in it. Why am I in it?
The door opens and you see a guy walking his dog with the Sunday papers. And then you check your watch and it's 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, next time.
Yeah, exactly.
Could probably go home now.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously you had steering wheel, which Rue was heavily a part of. I used to play Premonition, a residency at Premonition. And when Rue asked me to cover one day, I always give him his flowers for this moment, but he asked me to cover him at the Will on a Saturday night, and I was like, yeah, no problem. Covered him, and I think he actually was still there, if I remember rightly, because he said to me after, he's like, great job, done a great job, do you want to do it next week? Or the month after, I can't remember exactly, but invited me back. Ended up being a resident, and ended up leaving Premonition. Obviously, I'm grateful to Premonition for the opportunity, but obviously you move up, don't you, to the next level. Like, it was kind of like, the Will was kind of like the higher tier of clubs at the time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
He knows all the time. I tell him all the time, you know, for that moment that he gave me that opportunity. And then it kind of like, what happened after that? Yeah, then obviously the Rainbow and everything started to appear and events started to happen there. And yeah, it was like, but in the minks, before all the Rainbow stuff, obviously we had Silk City, yeah.
That's what's about Silk City.
Yeah. So
was it set up somewhere like Nature's or something? Oh, I like to think for where, I can't remember where it was. Was it like a little, it was like people who do nothing kind of garage, kind of you walk in and that's how I imagined it.
It was like when I first started, I said this on another podcast, when I first started, the 31st day, like I actually didn't mention this on the last podcast because I don't know why I didn't actually mention it, to be fair, but I'm going to mention it now. So my best pal at the time, who used to put on a lot of underground parties as well as resident these things, he was, when I got asked to play on Silk City, I says to my mate Ben Curtis, he used to do the Saturdays with me, I was like, they've asked me to go on the Silk City. You know, he's like, yeah. He's like, I said, but I need an MC. He's like, I can spit bars. I was like, when the fuck have you been able to spit bars? I've never heard you say spit bars. He's like, yeah, I used to be called MCD at Telford Ice Rink. He used to be an MC at Telford Ice Rink.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, cool. Give it a whirl. So anyway, he come to me to this this Silk City thing, and obviously it was like people just do nothing, but it was a lot worse. It was like the door had been kicked off, the door had been used on a set of crates to put the decks on, and the room was so dark, and the only thing that was the light in that room was the end of the spliff being like when it had been sucked. You just seen, oh, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, oh, 6 people in the room.
Like a lighthouse.
Yeah, it was that dark in the room. And I was like, you know, me being me, like, it was just like, just really, what's the word? Not scared, but really nervous and shy about the situation. I just didn't know. Vulnerable.
Yeah.
And anyway, so they must have been like something to do with the laugh show that was on before. So they've all got up and left, and I was like, oh, I feel a bit better now. You know, I did the mic to my mate. Could he spit bars? He was a bag of crap.
He couldn't fucking spit fuck all. He was just like, I thought you were going to say, come out like with some lend a lot.
No. I tell you that.
No wonder Telford Ice Rink got rid of his.
But apparently he was good, like, and, you know, like, I met someone a few weeks back. I went and watched Rue play at this thing in Telford. And the guy's come up to me. He's gone, oh, do you know Dean Curtis? I was like, yeah. He says, I was the DJ and Dean was MCD's spitting bars over my set. I was like, oh, so we could spit bars then. You just couldn't that fucking day.
I choked that day.
Yeah, so we did the show, like, and I got invited to do a Saturday, which was...
What did they get you to do first?
What did they get you in, like a Tuesday or something?
It was Thursday night, like once or two in the morning.
He's trying to contain his excitement. Look how excited he is to be talking to you about it.
It was. I remember, man. Yeah, I remember back in the day.
Yes, it was a Thursday.
You can always feel the hot rocks dropping on his
bushel suit.
So it was a Thursday night, once or two in the morning, like was the first show. We only actually did that once, and then straight away the guy was like, we want you to come back on again. Regular slot on a Saturday.
You're like, that's more like it.
Yeah, 2 till 4 on a Saturday afternoon. And we did that for about a year. And then obviously getting a bit more confident on the mic. At the time, I was like, mics. You know, it's like, you know, because I was like, not that person to get on a mic.
Yeah.
Now I can't leave the thing.
Fast forward to now. You are
sleeping mics.
That sounds weird.
Does it not? Yeah, does it
weird?
Mind?
Yeah. Is that any
clip up or sleep with mics? Next board weekend, you're going to be in and David mics. Bring your ID.
You know, as it went on throughout the year, this kind of like, it was getting really popular, the show was, and then the radio manager at the time was like, oh, can we get, do you know, we can get more people on. I was like, well, you got like your Nicky G's, your Davey Boys and all that. They're all banging out Speed Garage as well. You know, and it kind of like, he started getting all the other lads on, you know, and then it just created this scene. Then this scene was just like, just, you know, flourishing, and all new music was starting to be made. And
just taking a slight step back though, Speed Garage wasn't, you kind of, was one of the first ones to push in Speed Garage, wasn't it? It was Garage.
On the radio. Then, yeah. On the radio, yeah. Not because Speed Garage was getting played every Saturday at the Will with Rue and the Hinsleys.
Yeah.
They were all dropping the Speed Garage. And then you also had Mix FM as well at the time. They were banging out the Speed Garage. But so Mix FM were doing the Speed Garage, and then Silt were doing Garage.
Yeah.
So it's like worlds apart. So I used to listen to Rue and all them boys, you know, before I even was really heavily into Speed Garage, because I was more like trance and hard house at the time, and I kind of started to, you know, drift into the UK garage and Speed Garage. But yeah, I forgot my point. So yeah,
it was taking off.
So yeah. So yeah, it was starting to take off. On the radio, because it was predominantly garage. So we was the only, like I said, we was the only show on a Saturday. There was this Speed Garage and classic house that I was playing, and like everyone around us was like, you know, like UK garage and whatever, and drum and bass and stuff. So yeah, that's when it kind of like started, like everyone was like, oh, what's this? And then, like I say, got more of the lads on that were playing it around, and you know, then we started to escalate then into, you know, people wanting it in their clubs because of this massive boom of this music. And you know, then the Moon Lounge was born. Like, bearing in mind the wheel was already going, Premonition I think at this point might have closed down due to a stabbing.
Yeah, I think it was like someone
stabbing or a shooting or something like that. So it kind of like, we're getting trusted in like little, in these nice bars now, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you really want to take the risk? But yeah, it was good. Like to say, the Moon Lounge was born. There was other venues going on as well. And then we started putting on stuff at Subway as well. Me, Andre, and Dan Hancock, Baseline Evan. So this scene was born. It was like, wow. And that's where it all began.
Was there a breakthrough where you thought, shit, man, we've cracked it? Was there a moment?
I think when I started Jump Records, because it was at the time, I started the record label with Tempest Records, because I didn't really have a lot of funds, and I thought it was a great move because they had obviously the record shop as well. Do you remember Tempest Records?
Yeah,
they had the record shop as well. So I thought it'd be a great partnership. But they kind of like, I don't know, they dragged their heels with a few bits and bobs. And because they were taking so long with getting, I don't think they knew about getting records pressed and da 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 da. So a lot of, I kind of thought, we had this big meeting with all like the DJs and artists that were kind of involved in this scene. And it was like, right, like David Boy, Nicky G had a song ready to go. You know, there was a load of people that wanted their records out, but obviously you can only put so many records out in such a, you know, in a certain amount of time. And, you know, you've got to wait for the press to come back, blah, 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 blah. So because it was the longevity of it, the first record was Danny Wynn, which come out, but the next record was going to be David Boy and Nicky G, but because of that whole long process of it, David Boy and Nicky G decided to start Echo. And that's how Echo became about, because the label, you know, we was taking too long. And then because of that longevity thing, I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to do this on my own. Like, I can't rely on other people.
Sound like there's too many people for some one thing to handle,
too many chefs in the kitchen, you know what I mean? Like, you know, I wanted it now, now, now. And they were kind of like, you know.
He'll strike while the iron's hot, though.
Like, so, you know, I didn't want to lose Dave and Nicky as an artist on the label. You know, there would have been a huge part of that. But, you know, they kind of went away, and I was like, next thing you know, like, Echo Records was born. I was like, oh, fuck, I've lost them as artists now. You know, they're not going to be part of this family, this big family idea that I had. So, yeah, and they kind of ended up being a rival label then. It was like, you know, we're at loggerheads and who's going to get that artist? And, yeah, so it kind of went the way I didn't want it to go. That wasn't the vision. The vision was to have everyone on this label. It was never about making money on it. It was just about kind of, like Sheffield at the time was putting out a lot of music with Big Ange, John Bichieri and whatnot, and Jamie Duggan, they're all putting out this music. And I thought, you know, we need to do that. And that's why I was like, right, I want to start a record label in Birmingham to give everyone this opportunity to be as good as them, if not, you know, on a par with them, you know.
Start shouting about Birmingham.
So. Yeah. Because we were just playing their records, you know, like, we want them to play our records. But like I say, the longevity of it all kind of started to veer off, and they started to do their thing. And yeah, so it kind of like didn't turn out the way I wanted it to turn out. And they, Echo Records, it did become a decent label for Birmingham.
Did you have a business acumen then of thinking, okay, this is how I want to do it. I know the business side. Or did you bring business people in? Was you printing the records and stuff as well? And
yeah, but in the end, when I took over, I found like a pressing company that pressed the labels and stuff. But it they were really hungry with Echo. They, you know, they really wanted it to work. In the end, it became like a second part of my career, but it did kind of. They kind of had a team. It was just me.
Yeah.
In the end,
they had down in the actual admin of the business of it rather than.
Yeah. It's like, I know Dave, obviously, there's Dave and Nicky were, you know, sharing the responsibility of the label. And at the time, Dave had his mum as well doing the admin of the label. So there was a team, which is, you know, a team makes things successful. There was just me on my own running Jump in the end. And at the time, I smoked copious amounts of weed. So that kind of slowed down the process as well.
So the creative side was like brilliant, but you're putting it into place was like crap.
Yeah.
Get your email up. Oh,
I know. Yeah, that can wait another day. So, yeah, I smoked.
What happens to that letter that come through?
Yeah, exactly. No, honestly, that's what it was like. You know, and...
And it was taken away from your creativity then, I suppose.
Yeah, well, no, because I was started building music at that point as well.
Well, it was just, he weren't doing anything.
Bangers out, but no one listened to it, just listened to himself.
So they kind of ran away with the scene and they become successful within the scene. And so, you know, they deserve the flowers on that because they'd done it right. And, you know, I didn't really have a team to make it how it should have been. But there is news on the horizon with Jump Records.
Go on.
Can't tell yet, though. Oh. I can't tell you yet, news.
Is it imminent? Because this is going to be out in about 3 weeks. So it might be like a... I won't push you on it.
This is off camera.
Yeah.
Off camera, yeah. So we get this out.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So we can go back into the Yeah, so there's a massive resurgence of speed garage coming back in, like you said, the Rihanna revocal. I believe that's revocaled. It actually sounds like Rihanna, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's actually not Rihanna.
Oh.
No. Because you can go on a like, website and you can type in the artist, that, and it's a real person, and they'll recommend a singer or whatever that will sound like close, or you know what I mean, to the vocal that you want to be resung.
Yeah.
But you have to do that sort of stuff for clearance purposes. But yeah, there's been a massive resurgence. Like I've done an official collab with Inner City. I did Good Life, which done really well last summer. I did
That was everywhere.
Yeah. It is everywhere. It's good. It's still getting Radio 1 plays now. Also did Up to No Good as well, which hit just over 4.5 million streams yesterday.
Oh, yes. Nice.
So yeah, happy about that. I mean, I reckon it could have done a lot better at this point, but it took too long to come out, and that was no fault of the label or anything like that. It was just clearance stuff. Like it was.
I was going to ask you this. So you say, for example, you're listening to the radio and you're like Ultra Beat, Pretty Green Eyes. You go, oh, you know what? Bang a beat on that now, re-release. That'll be. So how would you go about you getting clearance for something like that?
So you can do what you want, like as in terms of remixing, but it will always only ever be a bootleg if you don't get publishing cleared, and if you've used the original vocal. If it's a re-sing, you only have to get the publishing cleared. They can still say no, and then. If it's the bootleg, if you've used the original vocal, you have to then get the permission off the writers. And 9 times out of 10, you think, oh, there's only going to... No, when you actually dive into it, it's normally about 5 writers. Wrong. You know what I mean? There's 5 people sat in a room writing these lyrics. You know what I mean? It's not the actual artist that has sung the song.
So it suits you to a lot.
You've got to get that clearance off that person. And if you find out that one of them's deceased, then you've got to go to the estate and speak to the estate solicitors, and it's just over right.
Like, so some of them, you look at it and you're like, man.
It's just a minefield. Like,
Obviously, you've been around the world recently. You've been in Oz. You've absolutely gone off in Oz.
Yeah.
Let's talk about you bringing back the gun fingers. Mate, I've seen some people, I watch your clips and I'm like, even when you do it on the clips, I'm not even in the crowd and I'm like, oh, it gives me a little bit of a, oh, yes.
So,
what's the inspiration?
Don't, because I'm just stupid. I am when I'm behind the deck, because I'm not ridiculous. Like ridiculous.
You've got energy, mate. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, lightest one. I think it's undiagnosed something. That's what I think it is. Like my wife's like, you know, yeah, you definitely got ADHD. You have. I'm like, have I? Yeah, just give me something to do. but yeah, she's in lockdown. I did the old jigsaw.
Do you remember the jigsaw? I was doing this in lockdown.
So, like, I just do these stupid things and they just stick for some reason, like, with people. But I did my first show in Australia, in Geelong, and I was just like, because it's kind of a significant part of the tune, that clock, clock, pow, pow, like, and I just thought, when I did it, I was like, bang, bang, pow, pow. And then the video came out and I was like, fuck, that was on time. And it was literally like, on cue, like, and
do you rehearse it in a mirror before you go out, or is it just
no? It's literally that was the first time I did it on that one video. And even my mate messaged me, he was like, you rehearsed that, didn't you? I was like, no, just did it, like, and it just become a thing then, like, and because a lot of my records have got that click, click, pow, pow in it, I just do it to all my records now that I've got that click, click, pow, pow. And I did
just before it drops as well, it's click, click, pow, pow, and then it drops, and the crowd just like, oh, yeah.
So I'd go like click, click, pow, pow, and then go out to the crowd, like, you know, and you just go.
Any plans to maybe put like a grenade in?
If they don't dance, yeah. Woo, like that. And I'll just go up. That's the next
one. Yeah, you got to credit us on that.
What's that feeling like when so I've seen the video and even I'm buzzing. Seeing it, so click, click, bang, bang, boom, like that, and then they're all giving it you back. Trying to describe
especially when it's your own record, like, yeah, it's amazing because especially like this, when I go to Australia, like, you know, like when just like I go back and, you know, I was doing stuff in Birmingham. It's just like, I was just appreciating Birmingham, but to go to Australia and be appreciated.
The other side of the world.
And to be honest, like, it's a whole different world for me in Australia. I'm like, when I got interviewed in Australia, like, how's it feel? You know, like, I feel like Kanye West. I feel like Kanye West. When I walk into a venue, I feel like, you know, everyone wants a piece of me, like, want to grab me, have a photo, chant my name when I'm walking out to the booth. I've got security either side of me, tunneling the way to the decks and stuff. And, like, I don't get that in the UK. So to go to Australia, you know, like, and it's, like, 50 times bigger than the UK, something like that.
Yeah.
Or 15 times bigger. I can't remember, but it's a lot bigger.
Yeah.
So to be appreciated, not just in like one place like Sydney or Perth, like all over Australia, like I'm just like this icon from bloody UK, like, you know what I mean? It's so bizarre. Like, we were sat in on the first show where I'd done that click thing, and me and my wife were sat there, and it wasn't very busy. It was probably about 20, 30 people out on this terrace thing. So it was, I held about 300 people in there, I think it was. It was about 30 people out there, and I was due on in like half an hour. I was like, oh, God. Like, it's going to be one of them, innit? She says, listen, just take it for what it is. Just go and enjoy yourself and just test your music and stuff. And, you know, but like, literally.
Have fun.
Yeah, just have fun. Like, just, you know, it is for what, take it for what it is. And then next thing you know, flocks of people are coming in, like, and the promoters come up to me, well, the owner of the bar, and he's gone, this is what it's like in Australia. They come for the headliner, they come for the guests, like, and everyone's Joey as they're all walking in. And before you know it, there was like 250, 300 people out on this terrace within like 20 minutes of, you know, being due on the deck. I was like, fuck, they'd all come to see me, like, in this little town, you know, like hour and a half from Melbourne, this little country village. They'd all come to see me, like,
travel as well.
It's mental, absolutely mental. And then it was the same in Melbourne. Perth was a sellout show. Sydney, I was told that when, because I was obviously behind the decks preparing, and this girl was on another stage DJing, and she said literally people were running from her stage to make sure that their pitch on my stage, like, to see me play. And literally,
now she hates you.
Eh?
So now she hates you. She's just about to get the click, and then everyone had gone, and you saw it, man. She's loading up a bow and arrow, and everyone's just
popped up. So, yeah, like, to hear that, and it's just mental. Yeah, and
so just touching upon, before we start to wrap up, let's go back to lockdown, and obviously we're down the blues, and you've done a big set down here during lockdown. You released It's Gonna Be Okay as well, which was kind of an NHS kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
that was accidental as well. Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, that was accidental. Yeah.
That's a banger as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
What was it accidental?
Because I'd already done the track. And I think the original vocal, her name is Abby. She'd been very offended. I was like, I think your name's Abby. Yeah, her name is Abby. And I'm sure It's Gonna Be Okay was all the female vocal part of it was already that part. But the rappers, the MCs on it, Chiverton and another guy, Hotch, I haven't remembered their names, they wrote about the NHS and stuff, you know what I mean? Like,
So you already had that there for the night.
But I already had that, but they'd already rapped about just general stuff.
General
crazy. And when I said, let's do a fundraising track, let's turn this into a fundraising track. I already had the top line from Abbey. I just got them to re-rap about the NHS basically. And then so the track was already done. You know what I mean? Like, just as a garage track. And then I obviously turned it into a NHS fundraising record, which done really, really, really well.
Yeah,
done really well.
And you got points a lot for that. Was that from...
So I had a certificate come through the door from, at the time, was, what's his name, and the Mad Lord Mann. No, Boris no, Johnson. Prime Minister. Boris Johnson. Johnson.
Oh, from the guy with the hair.
Yeah.
I thought you were the mayor. We... On the parachute with the hair. Oh, yeah, Boris Johnson.
Yeah, Boris Johnson. And I got nominated for award for, what's it, Heroes? What's it? Help, not Help the Heroes. What's the one that Mirror do? Hidden Heroes. No.
I know what you mean.
It's on telly every year.
Should be down here in the notes, really.
Help the Hit, not Help the Heroes. Don't know. Anyway, so I got nominated for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to edit back in me telling you exactly what it is.
Yeah.
So sure you should after.
Yeah. And then I won Telegraph. Did I come third? Third on the Telegraph Awards. Not the Telegraph, the paper. I've come third on that. I think it was, a guy on a farm won. Like milking cows or something. Like, don't worry about me giving my Sunday up every Sunday to, you know, help people every Sunday.
He was going to milk them cows anyway.
He was. Yeah, they needed milking.
That's just his job.
Yeah, he was doing some like online like farm thing, like, you know, filming milking cows. So it's like an agricultural thing. He was always going to win it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Over me in my gazemes.
But that
encouraging that, drinking gin.
Yeah.
It's never going to win, is it?
That period. Go back to that period, though. That period was weird, wasn't it? But I think for DJs and wannabe DJs and people who were doing, who weren't scared to put themselves in front of stuff. No, not you. Oh, no, wait.
These are coming wannabes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, nicking tracks.
No one knew who you were until COVID.
But it was a different time, wasn't it? If you didn't mind getting in front of the camera, it was time to.
You had a static audience, because everyone was just in the houses Facebook, on social medias.
Yeah. But it was a turning point for my personality as well, behind the decks, because I didn't have. Because my wife always said to me about being a bit boring behind the decks, you know, like be a bit more like, you know, out there and, you know, engaging in with the crowd. And I could never really do it because I thought, I felt like I'd really sweat your armpits and start spraying everyone. You know, it's
for a birthday cake, Adam Loss there. What's his name?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember his name. You can edit that.
We'll edit that. Throw pastries, general food items.
So I was kind of like, I was too shy to really express how I wanted to be behind the decks. And when we did
Steve Aoki, sorry, Steve Aoki. He throws the birthday cakes.
Yes, he is. Yeah. Well done.
Thank you.
So when I did this live, obviously I only had a camera. I didn't have a live audience as such. So I just started prattling around, especially after a few gins. I just started being like me. Started being more me, like, and coming up with these stupid dances and stuff, which obviously meant a lot. Just touching on that, like, you know, I had so many messages from like young kids and, you know, parents and everyone that was struggling and stuff, and saying, like, you know, sending me videos of their, you know, kids in the kitchen, like with me on the TV behind doing this jigsaw, which is just, and I was getting sent pictures that the kids had drawn of me behind the decks and stuff. So it wasn't just the adults that was appreciating it. It was like, you know, the kids as well, you know what I mean? Which really, really, you know, was really nice. You know, it meant a lot. Going back to my personality. So then it kind of brought out this personality that I didn't show before, which I've continued to do. You know what I mean? Now I've shown everyone that.
Do you feel like yourself?
Yeah, I feel like myself. So like I'm being me now. Like, you know, this energy behind the decks has always been there, but I've just never done it because everyone always just stood there like that.
Yeah, trying to look super cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it is now, all over social media, isn't it? I think it's like, they all look like supermodels, like the really, you know, looking absolutely amazing. I don't even know if they're really mixing or not, but it's a real stage of people, but there seems to be lots of that, doesn't there?
Yeah, and when you look at the file, you've got 1.1 million followers.
Yeah.
What the hell? I've been at this 28 years, you know what I mean? Like, this is what I want, but like I said, it's great to see female DJs break through, and it not just being a male-dominated, you know, industry anymore. It's amazing because there are some, like, amazing artists. You've got, like, Paige Tomlinson, got a girl from Jessica. She really deserves it. Jessica Lowley, I think she is. She's really good. I think she'll break through very soon. But yeah, like
Hannah wants.
I mean, like, again, like, you know, Hannah, you know, she was kind of like, when it's very still very male dominated, you know, so she's, you know, deserves her flowers as well. You got Fleur Shaw as well, another Brummie. Well, I think she's from Tamworth actually, but yeah, we'll call her a Brummie.
Close enough.
Yeah, close enough. I think Hannah's from Tamworth actually.
She is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Made in Brough, covers the M42.
Okay. Yeah.
So nice.
Wherever you want it to be.
But like, just going on from that, though, that's what set you apart now. I assume that promoters are seeing that, and that's what's setting you apart to the 100 people who are all like, you having it.
Yeah.
It's reflective then of what you're getting back from the crowd.
Yeah. So, but I think, I'm not quite sure. I don't know whether I'm being like, you know, about this, but I don't know whether promoters want me to be like that way on the stage and stuff like that, but because it doesn't tend to reflect with the amount of bookings I get. Like, you'd think like, oh, we need that energy at our festival, we need, you know, we need, but it doesn't, like, it's kind of like put me in my own lane as an artist, but it hasn't encouraged any more bookings than what I normally get as like, I'm doing well.
Yeah.
But you'd think being in my own lane and doing what I do, it'd be a lot better. Like,
I'm a little bit cynical of it all, that Coachella and stuff like that, they will rather look that you've got 5 million followers, wouldn't they?
So yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, they're already bringing those 5 million people in. They don't really. I don't know if it's about the music. Yeah.
It's about ticket sales, like putting bums on seats.
Yeah.
But obviously, when I go to Australia and I do what I do, everyone's like, oh my God, what is this? Like, this is amazing. You know what I mean? Like, getting the crowds, put the hands in the air and all the mic work I do and stuff like that. And they're just like blown away by it all. But kind of UK, I don't know whether they're kind of warm to it so much.
Yeah.
But I have seen a lot of artists of recent, like, I'm not saying I've originated it, but they're trying to do a lot more stage presence in their sets now and mic work and that, you know. But it's nice to see that people are starting to be a bit more like that, rather than just being, you know, flicking the.
It's a compliment, remember. Flatter imitation is the.
That's if they are. I don't know. I'm not making
claims. We've heard it here first that everyone who does anything to do with dancing has been influenced by Joe.
Yeah.
Just sold it out. Just put it out there.
Yeah.
Jigsaw. Exactly. Yeah.
Or mic work.
That's it. Yeah.
So yeah.
So just wrapping up then, we want to do some quick fire with you.
Go on, then.
Best crowd you've ever played?
Oh God. So Made Festival, I think it was 2001, 2002. It was the first one coming out of lockdown, which was my debut, which is the one I made the post about being made in Brom. That was just phenomenal. It was amazing. It was like the, it was, I think I played second set and it was the only stage that was open. So there was like, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 people in front of me. And it's probably the biggest crowd I played to at that point in my career. And it was just mental. Like, I was literally like, before I was due to go on, because I seen like it just getting busier and busier and busier. And it's like 10 minutes before I was like, right, I need to go for a nervous wee. I've got in the thing and they're like, just heaving for no reason. It was just pure nerves, you know what I mean? That butterfly was just making me heave. And I was actually sick before I went on the stage. No one actually knows that.
Yeah.
They do know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
As soon as you get on, you're there. You're like,
yeah, it's all forgotten. Yeah. Everything was, you know, just
did you ever get that even now?
Yeah.
Do you ever get like a little increment of imposter syndrome or something when you know you're going out, you've got some, do you ever get a little voice that goes, you know, what if this don't work? What if that don't work? Oh, what if, will you pass that?
I get nervous, very nervous every single set. Unless I've had a few vodkas before, I'm like really, really nervous. So I try and have probably a couple of vodkas before I go on, just to not to be pissed, but to
Dutch courage.
Just to take away that little nervous edge. But yeah, every single set I get nervous. Sometimes I'm heaving, and more often than not, I go to the toilet always 5 minutes before my set. And on there, I'm like, come on, Joe, you've got this.
So if you're ever heaving into the mic, it's not part of the new, it's not a new vocal, it's just carried your nerves.
Yeah.
So do that with your gun, Joe.
I'm leaning up the wall with one hand and then running with the other hand. I'm like, you've got this. You've got this.
Yeah.
Honestly, every single
cried time. Shouting it back to her.
Yeah. Give me a. So, yeah, every single set, yeah, it's class. The same. Every single set.
One track that always works, it can be your own, it can be historical, that you always did your go to that you thought, yeah, okay, they're ready for it.
So I've got like a couple of Get Me Out of Jail tracks, which are all my own, to be fair, over the last few years, like 2 years. Surprisingly, it's not Up to No Good, which is my highest streaming record of all time for me. It is Good Life. Obviously, Raw Cuts, which is obviously due out.
Yeah.
And I also play an Armin van Helden. I Want Your Soul. Remember that one? I Want Your Soul.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I've done like a garage flip of that, and it's just become like iconic in my sets. Like, it's, you kind of sing into like a house track, and then all of a sudden, it's like, yeah, that shit was funky. And it just switches and it's like, bow, bow. And it's like this mad garage tune. Like, everyone's like, what the hell? Yeah. So the big reaction stuff, really, that I've been making of recent, which is, you know, they're always my go to.
Class.
Give him one. He doesn't want to ask. Worst cried.
Not necessarily has to be like the worst cried, as in there was four, but like a name them. Like, what was the, was there ever a gig that just didn't land?
Well, you wouldn't go back there, or it just didn't sit right. Didn't.
There's a couple, but I also don't want to mention because the club might think he's there for like, you know. But
that's why I was all like,
yeah. So there's like
we're about the positives, not the negativity. But we're doing
well. Obviously,
tap like, and spoil.
Yeah,
they will never let you back again. The tap and spoil.
No, I don't think. Obviously, like there's. Been reasons why some of them have been like poor.
Have you ever had just like the wrong crowd?
Yeah, but this is the beauty of having like an agent and a manager now. Like, they won't allow that to happen anymore. Like, they'll vet the booking and make sure that I'm in the right place, my music fits, and you know, like blah blah blah. You know, because before I was just a sucker just for going, yeah, you're on sound, yeah, you're on sound, and go to a gig and it's like. Got someone playing R&B before, yeah, not like, you know what I mean? Like, he's, yeah. You know, he's got a fit. Mm. But yeah, I think that's, yeah, so there's nothing like that's, like, I could say, like, it was crap because, yeah, I appreciate it all.
Yeah. Last one, quick fire. One DJ is the biggest wanker. No. One DJ that gets too much hype.
Rude. A lot.
One DJ that gets too much. <One.
laughs> This is for the clicks on it.
No, so keep that one out.
Dirty Villa what? Dirty Villa what?
Yeah.
Rue what?
Yeah.
So what was the question again?
One DJ that gets too much hype.
What? Go on. What was you saying? What are you looking at? Was that for?
You're asking him, aren't
you? Yeah, what are you going?
I don't know. One DJ gets too much hype. I don't think they get hype for a reason. Because they're doing well, or you know, I don't think no one gets too much hype, invalid hype. You know what I mean? It's validated, they should be getting that hype, you know.
Yeah.
I definitely don't get enough hype.
I agree.
I'm very hyper.
I agree.
You don't get hype. I give out.
Yeah. You know, but once our brother in law heard you were coming on, he was buzzing, man. He passed.
Steering wheel.
He used to be your glass collector and stuff back in the day. He was underage and stuff. So he used to follow your journey like right close.
Yeah. Oh no, mate. He was amazing. Like,
so we thought we can do a bit of a shout out. What's next? What's the end goal?
The end goal is, where is the end goal? I don't know where the end goal is. It's
would you move to Oz?
No, because I wouldn't be a guest then, would I? I wouldn't be.
You couldn't come back on air.
But made it Oz.
Yeah.
That's something we branch out.
Yeah, we branch out then.
That's from what we just us in those core cats.
Yeah.
Same.
So, what was the
end game?
So, I don't think.
Booking list?
Yeah, so I just want to play like some of the biggest festivals in the world. Hopefully, Kringfields is a goal. I was hoping to be on that this year, but my name wasn't mentioned. So hopefully next year, Kringfields, come on.
Shout out to Kringfields.
Yeah. Glastonbury, something, these are all UK-based. So I'd love to play Glastonbury. So moving into kind of like Ibiza, I'd like to play Amnesia. Yeah, kind of like high, and that really wouldn't suit my music. So probably Amnesia, and
DC 10s is gone though, isn't it?
No, it's still there.
It's still there.
Still there, but it's very cool. It's not my music at all. Like it's you'd like Ocean Beach. I got in Ocean Beach last year. Thank you, Billy Clements and Chris Wright. They trusted me to get on the decks last year.
Right, a lot of Billy Clements mixes at the moment.
She's a good DJ, Billy Clements, and she's a lovely girl as well. So yeah, she gave me the opportunity last year. I've done the job.
Wicked.
And they've invited me back again this year, so I'm playing there on the 5th of July. Rue's playing this year as well, so playing there 5th of July, which is the day before my birthday. We wanted to say the age that I'm going to be, but it's the day before my birthday as well, so it's all kind of just fell into place.
My daughter's birthday's the 5th. And our sister, isn't it?
Yeah, mine's the 6th, yeah.
So for July.
Yeah, so that's how I've been really covered. And then, yeah, I'm back out there again in October, beginning of October, playing for back to Ibiza Festival. So that'll be good as well. So, yeah, you got Europe, like, there's a few places I've been playing. Like, I'm playing Belgium in June as well, which would be really good. Big festival there. I'd like to play Amsterdam. I did play Amsterdam last year. Yeah,
there you go. Book it, Miss Kitta.
Yeah, so I
it was brilliant.
I paid on a tram. Yeah. It was ADE, which is the music convention thing there, and I paid on a tram. But I'd like to do like the clubs there because they just look intense, look amazing, you know. I mean, I just want to play in the club over there. Hopefully this year, ADE, or just be invited anyway to the Netherlands. And US, I really want to break to US.
Yes, you got to break the US, haven't you?
Yeah,
then Australia.
I've just heard, obviously, with
that Wu Tang track would have been a nice,
Well, I've linked up with these American rappers now called Lost Village, so they're obviously very American. Being Americans, they're American. Hopefully, like, it might prick a few ears over there. But I do get a lot of requests, and I have had someone hit me up saying, you know, we're like a tour company and we want to try and work it and bring you over. But there's this big thing about the working visa over there now, which I've heard costs $10,000 for. So it's kind of like the tour's got to kind of pay for that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm not really at that stage where I'm willing to fork out £10,000 to maybe get a tour. You know what I mean? It's got to
just keep, just keep doing the guns. So
I'll get invited to Texans. but yeah.
Brilliant. So we always ask someone as well. We always ask our guests if someone young and aspiring wants to get into DJing from Birmingham, what would you say to them? What would be your key piece of advice?
Just keep at it. I mean, you've heard my story. It's, you know, it's never been a silver spoon journey for me. You know, I've just grafted. Just wanted it. You know, maybe I've never really pushed into the right crowds as such to elevate my career. Maybe that's where I've made a mistake, but it's just about being true to yourself, really, for me personally. And just, just pushing as hard as you can. And hopefully one day, you know, you'll get noticed. You know, it's like the last 4 years. I mean, I've always done well, but the last 4 years, it's really elevated for me. Since we come out of lockdown and since I've had this release out, blah, 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 and broke into Australia. Like, my agent says about Australia, he's like, you know, I'm going to want to make you even bigger than you are over here. You know, this is the whole plan. Next year, we want you over more often than not. So, you know, maybe I will move to us. Nah, my wife. No, babe, I didn't mean it.
But if they could sort a little penthouse up the harbour,
yeah, we can fly the grandson over every week. It's fine. So, yeah.
That's perfect, mate.
Yeah.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for your time.
It's been enjoyable. I could chat for hours.
Love it, mate.
If you like this video, please do click to subscribe to the channel. We currently have 5,500 members, over 500,000 views. So let's convert some views into memberships, and that will continue to enable us to bring great guests on and continue making great podcasts. Thanks.